Right, good morning. Any questions?
So homework, as I said, is due only after the break, and so then there also isn't yet a new homework sheet. Okay, so I can give you, sorry, this is not stapled together because I didn't find on the click the button. This is basically printed out from these notes of mine, just to have it in a nicer form together. The statement of the Ohne and Scott theorem. So what we did is we looked at the structure of a primitive group, and we looked at a primitive group where we wanted the socle to be not abelian and not regular, and we found on the one hand one construction, the product action, a wreath product and product action. And we have seen if we have a wreath product and product action, that gives us basically A wreath B is primitive in product action if A is primitive and B is transitive and A is not regular. Right. The other construction, that's what we've seen last time, is the diagonal action. So in the diagonal action we have the socle. We have the socle is acting on the cosets of a diagonal subgroup, and a diagonal subgroup is a subgroup of the form where we have in every component the same entry, and then we know that this is the socle of G, then G must be a subgroup of T to the N, and then I can have, on the one hand, I can have the outer automorphisms of T, but only once, so I must have the same outer automorphism in every component, and that I can permute the components. I can permute them amongst each other. So that is not the full automorphism group of T wreath Sn, but I'm restricting it in that the outer automorphism part only can act on each copy as its own. Okay. And what I stated without proving this in detail, this diagonal action is primitive, and that is basically this case 3 of the Ohne and Scott theorem. The diagonal action, to be primitive, we need either that the part which permutes the components acts transitively on the components, or that we have two. It can be intransitive if we have two. So the smallest example of this diagonal action, therefore, would be if we take as group A5 cross A5, that is 2, so we don't need to be transitive, and we would have A5 cross A5 acting in degree 60 on the cosets of such a diagonal subgroup. And we discussed already that in general there are many such diagonal subgroups, and it depends. So for example, if we take let's do this. So example A5 cross A5. Okay. So there are actually multiple, there are many diagonal subgroups. right, to have a diagonal subgroup. Basically, that's an extreme case of a subdirect product. So I need to describe isomorphisms from A5 to A5. So every diagonal subgroup. And now, here in some way, I have already chosen the coordinates and made it may look nice. If I really want to look at how do the maximal subgroups look like, then I need to once choose a fixed coordinate system. So every diagonal subgroup has the form, I must have something in the first component, let's call this T, and I must have something in the second component, and T is in T, where chi from T to T is an automorphism. So an isomorphism from T to T. Right? Every diagonal subgroup has this form. So if I want to find the, if I want to describe the maximal subgroups of A5 cross A5, which give me primitive actions of diagonal type, there are actually 120 of them. Because there are 120 possibilities, because the automorphism group of A5 is S5. Okay. So, on the other hand, if chi is an inner automorphism, then clearly these two subgroups would be conjugate under A5 cross A5, right? If I put an inner automorphism conjugation with an element in the second component, why only in the second component? Because if I conjugate in the first component, in some way I'm just changing what these elements T are. So I can always undo that conjugation, or when I write it down, I can ignore it. If I conjugate with an inner automorphism, the whole subgroup is conjugate. So there are actually just two classes of subgroups under conjugation. Namely, I have on the one hand the straightforward one. If I have a direct product, really the things are pairs, or I can choose T and T conjugate by an element outside A5. And these would be the two classes of subgroups under conjugation by A5 cross by A5. With A5 cross A5. If my group is not A5 cross A5, but I could, for example, have what I could allow is to have the whole group have once an outer automorphism on top. So this would be a subdirect product of S5 with S5, where the factor group of order 2 is glued together. That could be my group G. The socle would still be A5 cross A5. But even then, this outer element, this can't. Because I only can have once here. They always, even if I have more, these stay different. Or even if I allow if I take A5 parenthesis 2, if I allow the swap of the two copies, this will not conjugate this subgroup to this one. So there are two fundamentally different ways how this group or some groups coming from it, groups with that socle, can act primitively of diagonal type. Right. Sure.
So these are primitive actions of diagonal type. Finally, we have seen we can take product actions where the first factor is primitive, that gives us primitive groups. We can take also groups where the socle acts on the cosets of the diagonal subgroup, and that gives us primitive groups. And that in particular means we can combine both of these. We can take first a group of diagonal type and then take the wreath product and product action of this with another transitive group. And that will again be primitive. And that mixture can also happen. And therefore, the case 4 in the Onen-Scott theorem looks a little bit more complicated, because what I can have is that the first factor in the product action is, okay, it can't, if it is affine, I don't really need to consider it separately. Because if it was affine, it turns out, then the socle will still be solved, the whole group will be affine. I have the wreath product basically sitting within a matrix group. It could be almost simple, or the first factor could be of diagonal type. And if the first factor is of diagonal type, in fact, in the analysis of how this group acts, so we had, in our analysis, we were looking at how does the point stabilizer in the socle look like? And we had the case, the point stabilizer does not project onto the whole group T. And in this case, we've seen it must be a direct product of subgroups, so that the action on the cosets is primitive. So we have a direct product of stabilizers. And that gave us the product action. And we had the case, it projects onto it. We had looked only at the extreme case that really our point stabilizer is just isomorphic to one copy of T, and that gave us the diagonal action. And there is then the mixed case. In the mixed case, basically, you can go and you can group your copies of T together to say several of them are together if the kernel of the projection on one of them projects also trivial on the other ones. So that means these are glued together perfectly. Right? If you have a subdirect product of a simple non-abelian group, you basically just have the two degenerate cases. You have the case it's a direct, perfect direct product, or you have the case they're glued together completely. So that would be the case. Several copies are glued together completely, and then actually one can see then relatively easily has to happen in a regular pattern. You can't, if you have 5 to glue together here, the next one have again to be 5 which are glued together. It can't be 4, because they will have to form a block system for the action on these n copies of T. And that is exactly the case that you have your first, that you take a group in diagonal action, and you take then the wreath product in product action of this group with something else. And if you take as the first factor a wreath product and product action with, and then again a wreath product and product action, basically you can, sometimes this is claimed as the wreath product is associative. You can, if you have A wreath B wreath C, that's the same as A wreath B wreath C. So that is itself just a wreath product of product action where your second factor is larger. So that's why there isn't a case in, why there isn't for this class 4 another situation of wreath product and product action in product action. So what we get, going back to the statement of the Onen-Scott theorem, now I can give you the full class 4. Okay, so we have class 4, and that is, I will call
product type, and I've already given you type 4C. So we have that M can be written as a product R times S. S is bigger than 1. So, well, why R times S? That's rubbish.
That's complete.
No. No, I don't want R times S. I want R to the S, right? Because if I take an action of product type, what does it do? If I take a 5 wreath 2 in product action, I'm acting on 25 points. On 5 times 5 points. Yeah. So I have R to the S, where S is bigger than 2. Sorry, that is a misprint. And we have G is a subgroup of A. Or sorry. That was rubbish. M is no. That M is not the degree in which I'm acting. M is the number of that is correct. As I stated here, M is not the degree, N is the degree. So what I get later for the degree is that N will be equal to D to the S. Okay, and I need to say what D is. And M was the number of, actually this was T to the M, M was the number of copies of D in the soccer. So, if I say M is equal to R times S with S bigger than 1, this just a priori means M is bigger than 1. R could be 1. And I need to tell you what R and S are. Okay. So, G is a subgroup of A wreath B in product action. Where A acts of degree. A is of degree D and B is of degree S. Okay? So, let me write down the cases and then I'll explain what FRSTMR. Okay. So clearly, I mean that I think we're willing to believe. If we take a group in product action, it can be primitive. And what we need as a requirement is that A is primitive itself. Otherwise, the wreath product and product action will not be primitive. Okay, where A is primitive of either. Okay, and now come cases for A, B, and C. For A is intended to be corresponding to type 3A. So, is primitive of either type 3A. What does this mean? This means that A is of diagonal type with 2 copies on which the socal acts primitive. Yeah,
So
what I want is that, okay, let's leave that condition for the moment also out. So what do I want R to be? If A is primitive, A must have a socle, and we've ruled out the case of an abelian socle. So the socle of A would be isomorphic T to the R. That's what I want R to be. Okay? So A is primitive, the socle of A consists of R copies of T. Okay, and if I now take the product action, I have how many, then what will happen there? I will take this group as many times, right? So I will have T to the R, and then S direct copies of these. So I get R times S copies of T. So the socle of the whole group will be T to the M, where M is R times S. Okay. So R, okay, so that is R, and R and S together fit with the M. Okay. Furthermore, what would be the degree of the product action? The degree of the product action is the degree of the initial group to the power, because of the product action, what I have as degree here. So that's why the degree is D to the S. Okay, so these formulas and these numbers fit together, okay. Right, so now what can I... why do I want S bigger than 1? Oh, yes. Why do I want S bigger than 1? Because if I take the product action and this group B was of degree 1, the product action would degenerate, right? And then I wouldn't have anything there. Then it's just the first factor of the product action and nothing is happening. So that's why S has to be bigger than 1. Okay. So that... Okay, so that's all correct and consistent, sorry. So I will have, so in particular, this tells me something. It can only happen in particular degrees, namely if the degree is a proper power. Right? Otherwise this product action case cannot happen. Okay. And now I can tell something a bit more about this degree and how many copies I have here. Okay. So, if A is primitive of diagonal type 3A, so then I would have that the socle of A would be T square. So I have that R is equal to 2, right? And what can I tell about the degree D? I have that, since R is equal to 2, S must be strictly smaller than M. Because otherwise, S would be M over 2. And what can I tell about the degree of A, the degree D? The degree would be exactly the order of T. Right? Because if I have T cross T acting in diagonal action, I'm acting on the cosets of a subgroup isomorphic to T. So I have order of T squared divided by the order of T. That's the degree of the diagonal action. Okay. Right. I could have A act of type 3b. So, what happens in type 3b? There, I would have that I have again diagonal action. So, here I have R copies and I have more than one copy. Otherwise the diagonal action doesn't happen. So I have that R is bigger than one, of course, then again S is strictly smaller than M, because I'm divided by a number strictly larger than one. And what can I tell about the degree D? Well, the degree would be the order of T to the power, I have R copies, so I have T to the R minus 1. Right? Okay. And finally, what I can have here is I could have the first group, the first factor A be simply almost simple. That's the easiest case. So if I have this, I have that R is equal to 1 and therefore S is equal to M. And I can't put any particular restriction on D because I need to have, what I just need know is D is the degree of a primitive action of this almost simple group A. And since I always have symmetric and alternating groups, that could be basically anything. If 4, then I'm falling back in affine case. So I know that D is at least 5. Okay. Right. So, what... that is the most naive case of product action. I take an almost simple group and take the Rith product, and here I'm are the two situations of the diagonal action and taking the Rith product and product action. So one of the homework problems is to find, I think what I was asking, for degree larger than 100, the first cases of the different, for these different cases. Okay, so in the affine case, the degree needs to be a prime power. Almost simple, basically, you can have whatever your degree you want because you have symmetric and alternating groups. Okay, in the diagonal case, we need the degree will be the power of an order of a simple group. Right? So, let me just note this down, because that is a fact one can't derive easily, is the smallest simple groups, the smallest simple non-abelian groups have orders. Okay, we have order 60, and that is A5. The next smallest has order 168, and that is PSL32, for example. The next smallest order is 360, and that is A6. The next smallest order is 504, and that is also some PSL. That is PSL28, I believe. Or is it PSL29? So this is 8 or 9. I think it's actually 9. Because of divisibility reasons, PSL28 is slightly larger than PSL29. I mean, normally they go roughly with a 9. For SL, it's clear that SL29 is larger than SL28. But if you take PSL, you have to factor out the center. And you have this GCD. And basically, what you get, you need to take the GCD of the dimension with a field order minus 1. And if you take the GCD of 2 with 7, you get 1. And if you take the GCD of 2 with 9 minus 1, you get 2. And that's why they are, why I'm pretty sure it is 9. And there is, I think there is one of order, oh thank you, 600 something. But you don't need. So, if you now want to see for diagonal action, what can you get as smallest? Well, you need a power of one of these numbers, right? So to have diagonal action, 60 is smaller than 100, so 168 would be the smallest for a pure diagonal action. And you can do case 3a or 3b simply by deciding, do you want just this group direct product with itself, or do you want a wreath product with the C2, which swaps them? Okay. And now if you go to the product action, well, for the product action, your degree must be a pure power. Right? And now basically you need to see what can you tell about the power. To be of type 4c, it just needs to power of any arbitrary number. Right? Because you can basically take... for example, if you take 11 squared, that's 121. 10 squared is 100. 11 squared is 121. You could take A11, wreath product, C2 in product action, that would be of 3/11 squared. It would be of this case. If you want to fall in these cases, you need to do a little bit more fiddling with numbers, because you can't choose an arbitrary number for D, but you need to take an order of a simple group. So to fall in here, well, let's do this one first. We would need to have the order of a simple group, and this could be, R could be 2, this could, so R minus 1 could be 1, so we would have 60 as the smallest possible here, and we need to have at least, S is bigger than 1, so we need to have at least 60 squared. So we actually get degree 3,600. And even the next one would be 168 squared. At some point you need to see when is 60 cubed, when is some number squared smaller than 60 cubed or so. But basically that gets you it's not something you want to calculate in your head, but it's not something which is really horribly hard to do. So, and if you now come, if you just want to write down, well, there is one more case, but that's even more special. But if you now want to go and you want to write down a list of primitive groups, and someone comes with a degree, well, okay, what you can check is the degree a prime power? If yes, you need to deal with the affine case. If not, you don't deal with the affine case. Okay, the almost simple case always exists and you can't avoid it, and for that you need to know in which degrees are almost simple groups primitive. And that's information about the simple groups. However, if your degree is not horribly large, even if it is a few thousand, typically one can reduce this relatively quickly to a plausible number. For the diagonal action, your degree must be the power of an order of a simple group. Non-simple non-abelian group. Since these are in some way so few numbers, this actually will happen very, very rarely. It will happen for orders of the simple groups. And yeah, I think there is one more 600, or is it 500? So somewhere in the 500, 600, there is one more order smaller than 1,000. And then you get a few more. But if you go for up to the few thousand, I mean, for having 2 there, you have already 60 squared. So if you wanted to go for degree up to 10,000, you probably just had overall maybe 15 kinds of simple groups which could occur at all, and basically 60 square is the only square smaller than 10,000. 168 square already is much larger, right? So these can happen relatively rarely only. Well, and then of course you have squares of powers here, any number which is a proper power. And it turns out for most degrees, I mean, most numbers are not a proper power or order of a simple group. So actually, if you pick a random degree, your groups, and also not a prime power. So if you pick a random number as a degree, your chance is quite high that the only primitive groups are the almost simple groups. And that's in some way the reason why one really now can use this classification for making a list. And people have done this for degree, I think, by now up to 4096 is a power of 2, and then you get a lot of affine groups. And that's basically the thing which is the obstacle. No, so you have 4095. And yes, you need information about the simple groups to have the description, but that is something where a lot of stuff is published, and it's more a task to be careful. It's not something where you really need to do something miraculous. And again, if the degrees are small enough, essentially what will happen is that the degrees for the simple non-abelian groups, if they come from something geometric, the degree they're small, there are theorems which say their smallest degrees come from something geometric, acting on one-dimensional subspaces or acting on certain geometric configurations. And so there isn't really that much which would need to be considered. Okay. Yeah, so that is, yeah, and then for this homework problem, basically, it's just filling a bit around which prime powers or which powers of one of these numbers do you get there. And it becomes, again, a problem basically on factorization of integers, what you can reduce it to. Okay. Well, there is one last case which is possible in the Onan-Scott theorem, and that case initially actually was forgotten in the first description. And that case goes under the name of twisted wreath product. I will deal with this only very briefly because it's a little bit more complicated, and you will see in a moment that this only can occur for enormously huge degrees and enormously huge groups. Okay, so let me briefly give you an idea what is a twisted wreath. So you know what a wreath product is. You have one group here, you take several copies, and you take another group which permutes these. Right? That's the construction of a wreath product. Now, if in the wreath product you take in your second group the stabilizer of the point one, that will fix this first component. Right? And in the normal wreath product, it doesn't do anything there. What you could still have, and you can construct this as a semi-direct product, so you make your semi-direct product construction a little bit more complicated. Namely, you say, not only do I want my second group to permute these components, I want a homomorphism from the point stabilizer in my second group, which, fixing the first component, still would do an automorphism on the first component. And the twisting just says, oh, something more is happening there. So it's a little bit more complicated as a wreath product. It was originally defined because one can prove other more general embedding theorems for groups. That's why this construction was found. And Now there is one case we did not really look at. But we didn't. Namely, we had said we looked at an abelian circle and we looked at a non-abelian circle which acts not regularly. What could happen is that the circle is non-abelian and acts regularly. That's a little bit strange that that can happen. And basically, what we have here is, so we have H, the circle of G acts regularly, and so our degree is the order of T to the M, where M is the number of copies. Okay. And we have that the point stabilizes. Okay. And we have that G, and one can now show it is a subgroup of a wreath of a twisted wreath product. Wreath product of a simple group T. Okay, and then sometimes people write this TWR for twisted wreath products with some transitive group. So let's call this group B, and B is transitive of degree M. Okay, in the printout, that group B is called G omega because that's the point stabilizer. Because the circle is regular, that second group part would have to be isomorphic to the point stabilizer. And what one can show is, and that's something I don't want to do because that gets a little bit more complicated, that M has to be at least 6. Okay. So what does this mean? This means the smallest degree where this can happen is the order of a simple group to a power which is at least 6. So that's 60 to the 6, which is a rather large number. So if you want to make lists, it will not occur there. It will not occur in... I've seen the construction theoretically. I've never encountered such a group. Even if you want to look at possible maximal subgroups, your group has to be rather large, right? You need to have in your circle, you need to have A5 to the 6, which makes your group even by, not just by degree, but also by absolute order quite large. And there are further conditions that you basically need to have that these two groups in a certain way fit together. To get a proper twisted wreath product, you need that this group actually is able to do something on here. So we need a homomorphism from B to the automorphism group of T. And that's where the 6 comes from, because you would need at least A5 here, and you need something that you can get from here to a to actually do the automorphism group of A5, to have S5 here, but that is a point stabilizer. The point stabilizer in G. No, you need from the here that even the point stabilizer does something non-true. In the twisted wreath product, yeah. So to make it twisted, you need that the point stabilizer here does something there. And so your point stabilizer needs to be able to do an S5. So you need to have at least 5 plus 1, which is 6 points. So that's why this is happening. And in fact, if you... Yeah, so this case can exist. I mean, you can't rule it out. Indeed, you can construct groups of this kind, but in many situations, this case really is not the one to worry about. because it is so large and so specific and can often be ruled out. And if you now look at how people do proof theorems about permutation groups, that has really changed in that now often proofs say, let's reduce the primitive case, and now let's go through the cases of Ohn and Scott. And this often doesn't even need to be considered, and see, can we reduce to the different cases? And in the end, we need to know something about simple groups and prove the theorem that way. These are not necessarily nice proofs, because by default they go into case distinctions. But yeah, in some way that really is a rather, that shows that this is a rather powerful classification. And I mentioned already, yes, one can use it to make lists. And for making lists, yeah. Unless you want to have really a list of degrees 60 to the 6. And I mean, there you will get tons, because you will also get tons of diagonal actions. That is not the case to worry about. The last remark is, there are a couple of, this theorem is unfortunately in the literature, as I mentioned already, in the first versions published, this case was forgotten. And then the cases are numbered somehow differently, that different people give them different names. I like this split up to have the A and B in 4 and 3 correspond, and that's why I made the name this way. But a lot of people split the cases slightly differently, and I have this table here which gives for a couple of published versions how they correspond to. Probably the classification, and this is something which is newer and might get more prominent, are, this is the last row, the names given by Cheryl Prager, which is a similarly, I think, a similarly fine classification. It's just there, I never remember exactly what the two letter combi. I mean, the TW stands for twisted, and H stands for holomorph, but I never remember what they are exactly called. That's why I didn't use these letter distinctions. Right, so what is this theorem otherwise good for? What I want to do next is to look at the case, is to say, well, primitive actions correspond to maximal subgroups. So, if I have a maximal subgroup of some group, the action on the coset is primitive, so this theorem can tell us something about maximal subgroups. And in particular, it can tell us something about maximal subgroups of the symmetric group, which are prominent because the symmetric group is a prominent thing. And what you can just say is, if you have a subgroup of the symmetric group, well, if it is imprimitive, if it is intransitive, it lies in the direct product of symmetric groups. And you've shown in the homework already that these are typically primitive. Typically, the action of the cosets is primitive, that these are maximal subgroups. Or they could be transitive and imprimitive, and then they lie in a wreath product in the primitive action. Or they are primitive, and then they must lie in these classes, in these Ohn and Scott classes. And then the only question remaining is, can subgroups in one class lie in another class? And once you solve this, you can get a list of how maximal subgroups of the symmetric group look like. But yeah, that's something for next time. Thank you very much.